You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Think of all the reasons we go online, communicate with friends, take classes, apply for a job or for unemployment, and much, much more. As more organizations and government offices shift from in-person to online access, the people who don't have access to the internet are really left behind, and that would be around half of Detroit's households. Bridging that digital divide is why Joshua Edmonds has become Detroit's new Director of Digital Inclusion. Joshua, the FCC's defined high-speed internet as a public utility. It has made connecting American homes to the web a top priority. Why is it so many people in the city don't have a good way to get online?
Well, at the onset, and I, you know, when you were doing your introductory piece, you really hit on many of the nuances that I think a lot of people take for granted. Now, in terms of why people are struggling to get online, I think that we had to look at that and unpack that a little bit. It is looking at perpetual access. You have some people where maybe during tax refund season, they're able to essentially, you know, get online for a little bit. They have a little windstream of cash to be able to pay for an internet bill. However, when months get tough, the first bill that goes is the internet. And so what we're looking at and the measurement that you had touched on with the household, that is, you know, people who essentially are already struggling with, you know, keeping the lights on, getting water in the home. And if you had to choose between internet or water, I mean, 11 times out of 10, you're going to choose, you know, water. So I think that, you know, we have to look at the cost as a huge barrier. And this is, I don't blame my telecommunication companies. Some people in this role, in similar roles, will always, you know, go after the telecoms. And I think that it's, you know, up to us as a community to begin looking at a lot of the low-cost offerings and really make a communal push to educate residents and the stakeholders in the community on a lot of these low-cost options, because cost is such a barrier for the internet in today.
Yeah, cost is a barrier. And, you know, I know one option in some communities would be the public library, but because of financial troubles, the public libraries in Detroit, many of them have closed those branch libraries where you could maybe walk in and hop online.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess when you think about cost, what else is that the main reason, or what are some of the other barricades?
Sure. So cost, yes, that is like the big one universally. However, there's three. So it always comes down to cost, relevance, and skill. Relevance is a huge barrier you're going to find, especially amongst your senior population, where they'll say, hey, look, I made it this far in life. I didn't need the internet then. I don't need it now. And I would say, you know, the internet's not a panacea. I don't want to force it or inundate anyone, you know, with it. But at the same time, you know, you have to educate them again to what you said in the beginning, all of those different services that are going online. If you are using any type of social service, the internet is relevant to you. And so making that case and showing the ways that it's relevant to you, that's been something that I've been very interested in doing, particularly with my seniors. And then again, that skill piece, I think that affects, that's a whole spectrum-based approach where just a lot of people are saying, you know what, you guys are talking about this internet, now I hear 5G and I don't even have, you know, internet in my home. What in the world? You know what, forget it. I just don't know what people are doing. I'm just going to opt out.
Throw up your hands.
Absolutely. And so we're seeing a lot of that bundled together, and I would like to boil it down to just saying that people are digitally disenfranchised.
And here we're talking about seniors, but it's worth noting 70% of Detroit school children have no internet access at home. And boy, that sure can't help school performance.
Yes, absolutely. So we always talk about the homework gap, and you know, it's real. A lot of times people don't really understand some of the nuances associated with the homework gap. But when you take something, for example, like a research paper, it could be a one or two page paper on any topic, really. That paper might not necessarily have to be completed online. However, there's online components needed to actually do the research. And, you know, you brought up a great example with the libraries, because the counterpoint, someone would say, well, you can do the research at a library. Just go to a library. Well, yeah, if you live close, but mobility is a huge issue for many Detroiters. And so the library, I love them as an institution. I was raised on public libraries. I think that they are great. And thus far in my time in Detroit, they've been a great partner for me. But what I've been stressing to people is we need more players in this space. It can't just be a few institutions. This has to be a community thing. if you are a church and you're already doing this work, open up the doors and let people kind of come in and, you know, do their homework there. I mean, there's so many different ways that we can do this at a communal level.
And I think it's worth just taking a moment to do a great big shout out to the wonderful main branch of the Detroit Library right there in the Cultural Center on Woodward. It's fabulous, but it doesn't help you if you're living on the far east side of the city and transportation's an issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I guess when you think about unpacking things, talk a little more about how this is holding people back.
So I would say it's a number of ways. So, I mean, let's say, for example, let's look at a regular family. Regular family can think of, you know, mom, dad in the house and kids.
Yeah.
We've seen, and this is coming from Ohio. Ohio's finding at the Ohio State University, they looked at broadband and like the value that broadband actually brings from an economic perspective. And they're saying that households, on average, there's an $1,800 swing per household that's connected to broadband. And that $1,800 is not just, you know, just a regular cost. I mean, that's more so like these houses with broadband tend to be able to access jobs faster. So if you're looking for a job, it's kind of a no-brainer that it's like, oh, well, you know, you got the internet. That's kind of where they're being advertised at this point. And even past that, there's a familiarity component with that too, where if I'm looking for jobs online, I must have some type of online familiarity or at least some type of technical familiarity or savviness. And so if people who are already struggling to use the computer to look for a job, then what actually happens when they actually get into the job? I mean, it could be, we're not even talking about coding at this point. We're talking about just really basic data processing that could be very intimidating for many people. So it's like, okay, from the workforce development standpoint, this is a critical need. When Amazon HQ2 was happening and it was the craze, oh, where are they going to relocate? One of the things Amazon had said was, we want to find a place that has a strong tech workforce, a strong tech ecosystem. That was what they looked for. And if we're talking about, you know, this huge population of households that aren't connected to the internet, can you really justify saying that you have a strong one? That's just not really likely. So, I mean, that's literally one angle. The other angle that, you know, I've been telling people, and this is a great way for banks to get involved, because we know there's a Community Reinvestment Act, and at least I haven't seen it here. Maybe some people have been able to do it, but you can leverage Community Reinvestment Act dollars for broadband investment. And the whole push on this one, where the banks kind of play a role, because if we have online banking being a thing, then in order for people to take advantage of that, you know, it all goes back to the internet. So it's like, from one end, you know, I'm talking about workforce. Another end, you hear me talking about banking. We've already done the, you know, K-12 homework gap example. And that one you can honestly continuously unpack, because I have two incredible interns I was able to hire last week. One of them's at University of Michigan, the other one's at University of Chicago. And they're with me, well, they're not in the studio right now, but they're with me at the city. And both of them told me when they went in for their freshman year in college, both of them did not know how to type.
Wow.
And so it's like things like this. They are getting into incredible institutions and they don't even know how to, you know, do a very, very basic thing like typing. And so it's like, what future are we sending our kids off into or to embark on? It's just one that's very, very uncertain, and I don't think it has to be. And so again, we can continuously unpack and go into so many different levels, but I mean, it's honestly endless. And for me, I have not ruled out a single person as a stakeholder in Detroit. I have said it: if you are a resident in Detroit, if you are a business in Detroit of any type, you are a stakeholder to me. Because I mean, it's as ubiquitous as the internet is, that's kind of how my effort I want it to be as well.
If you just joined us, I'm talking with Joshua Edmonds, who's Detroit's new Director of Digital Inclusion. You know, Joshua, here we're talking about lack of access to the internet in urban areas like Detroit, but we hear a lot about that also in many rural areas. I mean, what's going on here? Are there similarities?
Yes, yes. So there are clear similarities, and there are differences too. You know, the rural places, they might have one provider. In urban cities, we really don't have the same internet access issue, per se, as your rural places. We have a lot of broadband assets that are available. It's just that people can't afford to take advantage of those. So, I mean, the access, you'll see it. It's just people aren't really subscribing to it based on those barriers to internet adoption we touched on earlier.
Right.
However, for the rural people, they're like, look, we legitimately don't have the infrastructure in place. And if we do, it's really, really spotty. And it's, you know, what you're paying for in some of these cases is not even, you're not even getting broadband at this point. You're getting, you know, just basic internet, but it's incredibly expensive. Those are two separate issues. But what I do believe there's a great opportunity to have a discussion between, you know, rural and urban is that for urban folks, it's, we already have the internet service providers here. We can't afford it. So for the rural people, it's like, okay, once we get them here, affordability will be a concern. How is urban taking care of that right now? So I think it's a really great opportunity to work together there. It just doesn't happen enough.
And the end result, the end impact on people's lives is the same, urban and rural.
Absolutely.
So as Director of Digital Inclusion, how are you going to be able to close this digital divide in Detroit? What are you doing to close the gap?
At the moment, I'm doing things like this.
mean, getting out there. I know you're newly appointed. You're getting, you know, getting into the ropes here.
Absolutely. You know, I have a strategy that I believe will definitely work. But, you know, and this is kind of just from years of studying in this field and implementing a few successful projects myself in when I was in Cleveland.
Yeah. In fact, we should mention to everybody, you were doing digital inclusion work in Cleveland. So,
yes.
Yeah, what lessons did you learn there that you're going to bring to Detroit?
Oh, man. I mean, where do I start? I would say at the very beginning, community equity matters. That has been a core belief of mine. It doesn't matter how great your strategy is. If you're not able to get the buy-in from the stakeholders you need and the user group you need, it's not really useful. And what I mean by that, the core stakeholders, at least I should say the residents, it's the residents 200% or below at the poverty level. These are people who are facing widespread housing insecurity, who will move, you know, 4 to 5 times a year, people who, you know, are very reliant on social services. I need to get those people, that pool of residents, because when we're looking at that huge percentage of people not adopting the internet, that's the population right there that I need. And so for me, it's like I could have a foolproof strategy, but if I'm not in the community building that equity, building relationships with community stakeholders who are already doing this work, then, you know, my strategy doesn't work. And so in Cleveland, you know, we were very fortunate when I was working at the Cleveland Foundation. Cleveland Foundation, you know, being one of the largest foundations in America, we were able to essentially capitalize on that community equity. And the investments we did were, you know, we did a few, but it was because we had that equity already built up. So right now I've just been on a listening tour, hearing out people's concerns. I don't want to be invasive with any of my technology, but rather be much more integrative in the way that we can use technology to integrate into existing social networks that people have been able to build with community-facing organizations.
But the big thing is cost. So you're going to need money. Who's going to give you money?
Absolutely. Everybody.
Well, love your optimism.
Well, no, I mean, I honestly, yes, while cost is definitely an issue, I'm not really looking to look at like public dollars, like how let's get a tax increase to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking to do that. I'm looking to be as lean and as effective as possible. You know, obviously everyone mentions the foundations here, but you know, there's certain elements of a strategy that I'm kind of pushing for. For example, I'll give away one of the things.
All right.
give it all, but one of them, you know, the other day I was meeting with a nonprofit in the community on the east side, and I was saying that, you know, one of the big things that people take advantage of at the libraries are the library's Wi-Fi. You know, people will literally just go into the parking lot, sit there and connect to their Wi-Fi. It's already been programmed in many of the people's brains in the community collectively that libraries have Wi-Fi. And so I said, you know, libraries aren't the only entities that have Wi-Fi, but yet, you know, everyone's kind of going to them. So I said, what way can I, for example, talk to nonprofits and say, hey, do you guys have Wi-Fi on site? People are using it. Why can't we kind of publicize that? Why can't we let them know that there are free networks all around us? I mean, I think that everyone's really looking for the city of Detroit to come in and create a Detroit-wide Wi-Fi network. Sadly, I don't believe that we have the assets to do so. That's millions and millions and millions of dollars, especially for the city the size of Detroit. However, when we look at all these faith-based organizations, you look at all these nonprofits, you look at all these different entities that already have free Wi-Fi on the site. And so for me, we're like, this is a really easy lift. Can't we just find a way where we can empower residents with decision-making to say that if, you know, aside from you catching that bus to go 45 minutes to your nearest library, what about that church on the corner that has Wi-Fi? What about that, you know, nonprofit over here? I mean, it's thinking like that, and that's a community-driven way, and that's not a whole lot of money to do that, if any. That's just more so us just saying we have a service that we didn't know that we could publicize.
And there you go. You could create homework spaces and workspaces.
Absolutely.
For people. What would success look like to you? What do you want Detroit's digital access picture to look like in 5 years?
Oh, yes. I love this. So 5 years from now, I no longer want us to be up. So let me backtrack. Of cities of 100,000 residents or more, Detroit is the least connected city in America. I don't even want to be in the bottom 10 of that anymore. And I honestly believe with the plan that, you know, we're putting in place and the equity that we're building up right now, realistically, we won't be in the bottom 10 anymore. I'm being bold in this one. I really am. But that's us being out of that bottom 10. And that is us illuminating pathways and providing residents the options to be able to choose to, if I want to be, for example, if I want to be a software developer, what is the exact residential pathway that I can take? Don't point me to, you know, some really, really expensive boot camp. Don't point me. What community assets can I take advantage of? And that's empowering people at so many different levels. That approach goes across the board. If I want to connect to this or that, you know, what does that look like? Can we get a connected Detroit where every single entity or organization recognizes there's a divide and they're doing things such as nominal as to what you pointed out? Hey, we have homework centers here. We have an extra room. We're going to be here from 5 to 7:30 already. You guys want to come in here to use our Wi-Fi, use our computer labs. I mean, it's literally, I think, to see an integrated Detroit where we are collectively working together and no one entity is owning this entire process.
And you're, I'm sure, going to be building models that other areas that are on the wrong side of the digital divide can learn from.
Absolutely. You know, it's really, really interesting because I've been looking for just the non-typical partners, people that are like, why are you partnering with them? And to give you an example, I spoke to recently Gleaners, the, you know, food distribution network. And I was talking to them. I'm like, wow, you guys might think that this is crazy. I'm reaching out to you, but just hear me out. You guys are serving organizations that serve the people who are struggling or have some type of food insecurity. I said, you know, Amazon has figured this out. If I buy a phone, they'll say, might you need a case? So what would happen then if we got so smart and said, we notice you're struggling to pay for food. Might you be struggling to pay for technology as well? And how do we empower people to take advantage of the offerings that we can provide? I think that's the way that I would love to see that happen.
Joshua Edmonds is Detroit's new Director of Digital Inclusion. And please come back and keep us posted on the work you're doing. It would be great to talk with you again and follow the progress.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.